When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dr. Carol Swain has been a tenured associate professor at Princeton and the professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt. She's known for her sharp cultural and political commentary and multiple book releases. Dr. Swain, thank you so much for joining us on Takeaways.
I'm so excited about being here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to be talking today about education in America, and I think that we could step back a little bit and even say that we're talking about the American dream, and education is such an important part of that. I know that's important to you. Could you give us a little of your backstory and explain why the American dream matters to you so much?
Well, first of all, you know, I'm probably a lot older than most of the people. I'm part of the baby boom generation, the early end of that. And in my day, we were told that the way to make something of yourself was to work hard and get an education. And so education mattered. But I happened to have been born in a family that grew to 12 children, rural poverty, southwestern Virginia. I dropped out of school after completing the eighth grade, not because of anything except the poverty. I married at 16, not because I was pregnant, but back then, if you could get married, that was a way to get away from home. So I married at 16, had my first child at 17. By the time I was 21, I had three small children. And I suffered with depression, the suicide gestures. And I can tell you that within my family, it was an uneasy fit. I can remember as a child feeling out of place, and almost feeling like a participant observer. And anyone who's done social science research knows that there's a form of research where you sort of immerse yourself into an environment and you do what the people in that environment do, but you're really studying them. And I can remember just watching my family and feeling like first that they were strange, they were not like me, but feeling like I had been dropped from outer space. And I also can remember being very serious as a child. My mother told me frequently that I was not like her other children. Mm. And now, you know, as a Christian believer who had a conversion experience in my 40s, I understand now that probably I was experiencing the call on my life. Mm. I had no idea that I would end up becoming a university professor. I went to a community college. I got the first of five college and university degrees. I never sought to become a university professor, but I can say today that God put people in my life who steered me in that direction, and I excelled. And I had no idea, like, when I was in that depression, when I was suffering, that I would become who I am today.
And you've had such an opportunity to study and to work at prestigious universities. Why do you think God included that in your story?
Because he has a sense of humor. If you saw the poverty that I grew up in, like the early part of my life, it was a two-room shack, no indoor plumbing. So when I think about my life, it wasn't supposed to happen. And what God did was bring people into my life that steered me. And the first person that changed my life was medical doctor who was a resident at the hospital in the city where I was at that time. I had moved to the city. And he told me I was intelligent, I was attractive, I could do more with my life. And that startled me because I was 20 or 21, had never heard that before. And because of his encouragement, I got a high school equivalency, a GED. And then I started working outside the home, and I met an African orderly who told me that I was smarter than people he went to college with. I should go to college. And by my acting on their encouragement, they opened the door to who I am today. Mm. And then once I stepped out, other people sort of encouraged me and pushed me. And I was an honor student, met the dean's list a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to get a job as a store manager. That didn't work out. I didn't get hired. I was told I needed a four-year degree. And I made a decision to be an honor student. And I purchased and checked out books on how to make A's in college, how to take essay exams, how to do objective tests. I applied the principles, graduated magna cum laude for working 40 hours a week, nights and weekends at the community college library.
Mm. I love that story.
It's a God story.
It is a God story. Wow. We talked a little bit earlier about the American dream being possible and so important to you. What do you want our viewers today to consider when thinking about the American dream? Why is it so important?
Well, first of all, I want them to know that where you start doesn't determine where you end, and that, you know, you can start at the bottom and achieve the American dream, but you have to believe that's possible, or you can be someone that has every advantage. You had your family, everything was handed to you, and you can end up at the bottom and lose everything. But I think that one reason why America became a great nation, and I don't know where we are today, but we became a great nation because it was possible for people to work hard and overcome the circumstances of their birth. And I think there are different people have different ideas about what the American dream is for them.
Yeah.
For some people, it is just being able to pay your bills, you know, have a nice house, have your children grow up to be decent people. But whatever your American dream is, I think that unless you can see it and believe that it's a possibility, it will not happen. And unfortunately, a lot of what we get today is negative, and people feel that because of their race, because of their sex, because of whether sexual orientation, whatever, you know, society is saying, that they cannot, you know, experience the American dream. And I think it's important for people to know that a lot of what happens to us, I think we are responsible in the sense that what we believe. If you believe that everything is stacked against you, then I don't think it's possible for you to achieve your potential. If you believe that you're a victim, you can't achieve your potential. And I think that for the American dream and for my generation, you know, we were taught about the possibilities, and it was positive, and I never felt that I was handicapped because of my race and my level of poverty. But I also was blessed by coming along at a time after the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I would argue that it opened up enormous opportunities for people like me, and I was able to take advantage of those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And the goodwill of people who didn't look like me mattered, because the people who pushed me and encouraged me, for the most part, you know, they were not people who looked like me.
Mm. That's so encouraging to hear. And we hear such a different narrative today. And young people are hearing such a different narrative today. And that's why it's so important that you're talking with us from your background, with your experience, and to see the story that God has been writing in your life. How can parents instill in their children that can-do spirit, that belief that God is writing a story for them, regardless of where they've come from, and that this may be the best place on earth to achieve their dreams?
Well, the first thing every parent needs to know is that they're competing, you know, with all kinds of influences that, you know, we didn't have even 25 years ago. And so they have, you know, the opportunity to be the first teacher of their children, but our world, our society, everyone surrounding them, their friends, may be, you know, pushing that counter narrative that you're a victim because of certain things. Or if you're privileged, if you're white, for example, and you happen to have two parents that are normal, that love you, then that's being dismissed as white privilege. And yep. So there are some kids that feel guilty because of that. In fact, I had a friend in my Sunday school class that her daughter was quite upset that she had been raised with such privilege. And the privilege that she found so disdainful was that she had a normal family who loved her. And so, like, you know, white is black and black is white, up is down, and all of this stuff like that. I think parents need to know that what the other narratives that their children are experiencing, and ideally, if they can have a relationship where the child will just talk honestly about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what they're hearing from their friends, unless you can have that kind of conversation, I don't think it would be easy for a parent to counter those messages. And those messages are not just coming from friends. They're also coming from in schools, even private academies, even Christian schools. The messages about victimization and you know, privilege, they're coming from places where you would not think it would be, including some churches. And I wish I could, that was not true, but it is true. And there are very few safe places where your children will not be bombarded with messages that are not conducive with them being the best person they can be or achieving their full potential, because they may see achieving their full potential as cheating someone else.
And this can wreak havoc on their mind, their thinking, and the guilt and the shame that comes with all of those false narratives can really be paralyzing. And that's why I'm thankful that you're writing these important books. Dr. Swain, this conversation is fascinating to me. As a father of six children and a brand new grandfather, I understand that there are a few things that will impact my children and grandchildren more than their education, the quality of their education, the standard for truth and morality is so important. And it's all on the line today. Everything's on the chopping block.
It is.
It's ready to be replaced with things that are just awful and twisted. I had a chance to talk earlier with Kristen Wagoner. She's the president of the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yes.
And we talk a lot about free speech and talk about parental rights in America. When it comes to parental rights in reference to education, what are some of the important things that you want parents to know about their rights with regard to their kids' learning?
Well, first of all, I have to confess that I'm a strong proponent of homeschooling, and it's because I feel like in America we have sort of lost control of public education, but also the private academies, the private Christian academies, and I'm going to carve out an exemption for classical Christian schools, because for the most part, the ones that I'm aware of have not followed the CRT, diversity, equity, inclusion route. But for the most part, if your child is in public school, you know, you do have a certain rights as a parent, but we find that with the government, whether it's through the state laws or departments of education, NEA, teachers' unions, we have a mechanism that fights against parental rights. And so, you know, you would think that parents would have the right to be involved in selecting the curriculum, not necessarily selecting, but monitoring the curriculum, what's in the library. Well, we find that again and again that that is being overridden, that's being trampled. I think parents need to know that their schools are not necessarily safe places, and that private academies are not necessarily safe places, and that they really have to monitor what's taking place at every kind of educational institution. And I think that with some parents, they feel very Christian parents, that they send their children to a Christian school,
yes,
and they think they're in a safe place. And that's not necessarily true. And it's not, it's certainly not true for the colleges, because we know that they have been infiltrated, but also the academies have been infiltrated. So there's no substitute for parental involvement, but also for actively sitting down, talking with your child, finding out what's on their minds, finding out what they're being taught. And one of the tricks that's being done now is that in some schools, they're not sending homework home with the children because they don't want the parents to know what they're doing.
Wow. My father is a public school teacher, and my grandmother, my grandfather were public school teachers. But we came to many of the same conclusions that you did. And so we ended up homeschooling our kids, and we found that there were challenges even in the private Christian academies
yes.
that you're talking about. They're not necessarily safe places. And so parents being involved and really taking the leadership position in their children's education, we had to learn is critically important. Dr. Swain, what would you say to the overwhelmed parent that is seeing that their children are learning a different set of values in school than the ones they're being taught at home? What can they do?
Well, I mean, it's definitely happening whether the parent has recognized it. And whatever you saw, you know, years ago with the Christian academies, everything is much worse. And awareness is like the beginning. You know, parents can exercise their voice. They can move their children. And if the resources are there, I think it's important for parents who can afford to do so to choose the homeschooling option. And it's not something that has to be so difficult, one parent, you know, teaching all the different subjects, because there are homeschool co-ops. There are ways to make it easier.
Right.
But even with the homeschooling, and I've spoken at many homeschooling conferences, apparently the curricula that has been infiltrated, and some of the homeschooling groups have parents in there that are progressive, and they're pushing things onto homeschoolers. And so there are no safe places on the earth. And as Christians, we should expect what we see. And I think that parents, it's a scary situation that your child will be exposed to values other than what you are teaching at home. And I think the best thing a parent can do is to have a conversation with their children about what they are hearing. Or you know what they're going to be told, because some of the indoctrination, they're being indoctrinated along the same lines. Because if it relates to race, if they are white, they're being told, you know, that they're responsible for the sins of their ancestors, that they have white privilege, that they are racist. And so with a lot of white children, they're being shamed, or they're being bullied because of that. If they're affluent, they're being guilted out because of their affluence. And so people need to know some of the ways they're being attacked. And then when it comes to a sexual morality, we find that there are clear agendas, that there are people that will enroll their children into a private school or into an institution where they may want to push, they may enroll a child and then say that their child identifies with a different gender, and they begin, you know, to dress a little boy as a little girl or vice versa, and they try to make the school go along with it. And that's a political strategy that people are using their children sometimes as weapons. And the parent today has to be vigilant, but they also have to know what God is calling them to do. Sometimes it's to save your own child. And sometimes you have the child that God has called and equipped to be in that public school. And that's the child that is taking notes, that's bringing the information home.
Right.
Because if it weren't for the Christian teachers and some of the Christian students, we wouldn't know everything that's taking place in the classroom. There have been successful lawsuits. There have been people exposed just because there was the right child in that classroom, there was the right teacher. The teacher, you know, they're constrained, but they are there because God has them there. They're gathering the information, and we need those people that are being placed. So there's some children that are called to be in those institutions, but there are some children that will be that can be destroyed by them. Because, you know, they just are not ready for the battle.
That's right. Boy, that is so well said. I know that what I'm about to ask you could take up the rest of our time together in answering, but it's always been on my mind. You're concerned and involved with teaching not only in education, but political science. And you said that sometimes these strategies are used as political strategies and the children are weapons.
Yeah.
What kind of person is trying to push ideologies of calling little boys girls and little girls boys and making white people or black people feel guilt and shame and full of racism? What good does that do? And why would somebody push that kind of an agenda?
Well, you know, my book, Black Afro America, we talk about critical race theory. And critical race theory is connected, you know, to diversity, equity, and inclusion. But at the root of all of that is Marxism, cultural Marxism, neo-Marxism. And it's about destroying traditional values and structures, the family, and people who believe that Western civilization is corrupt, Western civilization needs to be destroyed, and that the ends justify the means. There are parents who care more about the ideology than they do about the well-being of their own children.
Kids.
And so they, you know, endorse this crazy nonsense that you're not born a boy or a girl, that your sex is assigned at birth. And by doing that, they reject science. They reject DNA. They reject everything to push an ideology. And I can remember as a Christian when we were mocked as being anti-science, but we find that when it's convenient for progressives, they will throw science out the window to push an agenda. And so our children have been, you know, weaponized and targeted, and they have destroyed relationships. But I am encouraged. I'm encouraged because, you know, recently even the New York Times had an article about people, young people who were detransitioning. They had been transitioned to the opposite sex as a child, and then they realized, you know, that they made a mistake. And so the New York Times has finally said that there are some radicals, you know, that are pushing gender-affirming therapies on children. But when I look at what has happened across our country and just how easily people have endorsed all that in various states, it just makes me wonder what happened to America that we stopped protecting children.
Wow. Sometimes I think conversations like this, they're about ideas, and we're rooting things that we see happening on a TikTok video or an Instagram platform back into things like Marxism and critical race theory, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And some people say, I don't understand all of that.
Well, they better understand it because it's affecting every aspect of their lives, their churches, the military, every institution has been infiltrated with it. And at the root of Marxism is really a rejection of God, a rejection of the family, a rejection of everything that's stable. And it's all about conflict theory, keeping us at each other's throats. And so there's nothing good that comes from it. Burn your head in the sand will not make it better.
I love the way that you just said that. So when those of us who recognize the evils of Marxism have landed here in America, and not just out there somewhere, but right here inside of our homes and in our children's schools, it can make us feel angry, and it can produce that desire to want to get into conflict to defeat that Marxism. But is that playing right into the strategy to keep us at each other's throats, or should we have sort of a righteous indignation? Is the response to remain peaceful and unify and peacefully overthrow bad ideas? Or is this leading to a giant conflict and some sort of ideological revolution that's going to be real uncomfortable?
Well, we've been in a cultural war, I think, for many generations. And I think that there is a place for righteous indignation when you look around and see what's being done, not just to your own child, other people's children. And one reason I don't argue for everyone, all the Christians, pull your children out of public schools is because if you pull all the children out of public schools, there will be no one there to defend the kids who don't have parents who can be advocates. And I believe that God has his people positioned everywhere. Mm. And I think there are different strategies for different people. And so everyone's not called to fight the battle in the same way. And as Christians, you know, we're told to love our enemies. And when we look at many of these people, they are innocent in the sense that there is such a deception over them.
Yes.
I always pray for eyes to be opened, that they might be able, the scales would fall from their eyes, that they'd be able to see. And then there's so many parents and so many people in churches that they may have a biblical worldview until it affects their family. until it's their child or their grandchild, then they start rethinking biblical principles and trying to excuse certain types of behavior. But the Bible is so clear about consequences of certain kinds of sins. And I think the most important and loving thing we can do is to speak truth, even when it's uncomfortable. Because at the end of the day, we benefit no one, and certainly not ourselves, when we lie and we make excuses, we pretend that we don't see what's taking place. And I applaud, you know, the men, the women, the teachers that have stood up to the public pressures. And they've been very successful lately in winning lawsuits. And in my books, like there's one, The Adversity of Diversity, where I point out that the Civil Rights Act prohibits all kinds of discrimination. White people are protected. Christians are protected because Christians and Jews have a target on their backs at this time. And men often have a target on their backs. And it's so important for people to document discrimination. And me as a racial minority, you know, I'm accustomed to, I know what to do. You know, like I've always known about civil rights. And but for many white people, they've never even thought that they had civil rights. Men always thought that women were protected, but they didn't see themselves as being protected. We do have some laws in place. People do win some court cases, and it's important to get knowledge. And I think the most important way to protect yourself and your family is to get information and don't pretend, you know, that you don't see what you see. God will take care of it in the end. Well, God may be calling you to use the brain that he's given you, to use your wisdom, and to step out there and fight, if not for yourself, but for someone else.
Hi, I'm Kirk Cameron. Thanks for listening to this episode of Takeaways. If you love the conversations that we're having, please follow or subscribe to this podcast to never miss any of this great content. And please consider leaving a positive rating and a review to help others like you discover this show.